Good evening, and welcome to the regularly scheduled March 15th meeting of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board of Trustees. The board previously met in closed session, and we discussed the following items. Personnel item status of negotiations with San Luis Coastal Teachers Association, and direction was given to staff. Conference with labor negotiators, district designated representatives, Mr. Robinette and Dr. Valentine, regarding unrepresented employees, non-classified hourly employees, and direction was again given to staff. One case of pending litigation, and conference with real property negotiators regarding a portion of Sunnyside Elementary School campus in Los Osos, and Mr. Miller presented that, and direction was given to Mr. Miller. The board is now in open session. We need consensus on the order of business. Do we have consensus on the order of business? Okay. Approval of the minutes. Okay. Mrs. Dickinson?
For back to first, Andy Marinello was at the meeting on March 8th. He's marked absent. In fact, he made a glowing speech. Very. He was like the star. Whoa. One of them, yeah. Exactly. No? Then a couple of small things on March 1st. I just thought this was an interesting sentence when they're talking, Brad Parker's talking about the Avila project. Here's the sentence. He clarified that in the Avila project, only 3 of the 14 residential units being proposed would be affordable. This is an English major. Classified, yeah. Earmarked as affordable. And then approval of minutes. It said the minutes of February 15 were approved as presented, but aren't we deciding whether to approve those tonight? Then on February 15, page 5, just a little small thing. Oh, Ms. Botwin, on page 5, Ms. Botwin requested a future agenda item to consider the music department budget proposal submitted at the last board meeting, but actually it was quite a while back. It wasn't like the music proposal. It was, I'm not sure what date. So
it was in December.
We didn't put it on the future agenda. That's why I brought it up.
No, I know why you brought it up, but it said it was had been proposed the meeting before that meeting. I don't. When was it proposed?
I don't think it was proposed, but I think we talked about it. That was right after.
Perfect.
Right after the kids presented their musical. Yeah.
December.
The meeting right before Christmas. Yeah.
Madam President, if I might, my understanding of that, Ms. Botwin, checked my memory, was that that would come through the budget project thing and be a part of the entire budget presentation.
Okay, then, Mrs. Dickinson, with those changes that you've noted, would you like to move?
I move the minutes be approved.
Second.
Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That passes unanimously. We move now to the public comment portion of the meeting. We've received no written requests to address the board. Is there anyone here that would like to speak to the board? Okay, seeing none, we will close the public comment and move to reports. Mr. Miller, status of the state budget?
Thank you, Madam President. It has been a number of months now since the governor made his original proposal, and a lot of things are starting to take form and coalesce within the education community. Within the education community, there's a growing opposition to the governor's proposal, both vocal, print, advertisement, and television advertisement. It has started to impact him where he hurts the most, which is his approval ratings, and we've seen those go down from highs of 65% to about the same level as Governor Dukmejian enjoyed in the late 80s of about 38%. As a result of that, he had advice from staff. They take advice from their leaders. And as a result, much of what was being proposed by the governor in the method of which he proposed it got head nods from people. But as we get out there and start telling them what Prop 98 really is, which is a relief valve on spending for education should the state find itself in trouble. In other words, it's as equally on the downside pressure on the state as well as on the upside. So as legislators begin to understand Prop 98, they're beginning to think, even the Republicans are beginning to say publicly now, that the Prop 98 is a good formula and it benefits the state to have it in place, not altered. So we wait to see what happens there. The STRS proposal about saddling school districts with the 2% obligation that the state has been paying for the last 12 years is looked at by the Legislative Analyst Office as an unconstitutional recommendation of the governor's. So it doesn't look like that proposal itself is going to go very far. And then the final piece is the actual revenues of the state, the financial condition of the state, continues to improve dramatically, especially during the tax receipt period of tax return time. What was a $2.3 billion surplus owed to Prop 98 to school districts has now grown to over $4 billion. And it has gotten to be such a high number that there's almost certainly going to be irresistible pressure put on the governor to give some of that back to schools. So you have two things that come out of that if you think about it. Number one is the COLA is suggested originally to be 3.9%. It's now looking like 4.2. Okay, so that's good for categoricals. It's good for special ed. It's good for adult ed. It's good for a lot of programs we have. And even though we're basic aid, the 4.2 gives us a higher revenue on some of those programs. And the second piece is that how does he give us back this $4.2 billion or some piece of it? And one of the methods that's being used to further the conversation is mandated costs. If you remember, we do our mandated cost filings, and we have $400,000 and $600,000 owed to us, in addition to another $200,000, but about $1 million over the last 2 years that the state holds for us. And if we get some of that, it's one-time unrestricted money. It'll be highly beneficial should any piece of that come forward, because we certainly aren't budgeting to receive it. And it'll be good money for us to look at some special one-time allocations, read technology on that one, should it come forth. So it'll be a very beneficial time. Things are looking up. It's a good scenario at the moment.
Yes, Mr. Miller.
Mr. Miller, is the recent rhetoric regarding teacher merit pay, is there any substance to that as a proposal, or is it just trying to bash CTA back because of their public position?
Make no mistake, he's fairly serious about it, just as Pete Wilson was as serious about it at the time. Wilson is his mentor in many things, and one of the things that Wilson did, if you remember, was the CTA versus Gould contest, which ultimately the state lost. But because CTA was out in the forefront of the arguments with Wilson, he withheld funding, thus impacting their salaries. And this is not much different in terms of tactics. The outcome is much different because when we talk about his proposals, he's really impacting kids. It's not just CTA. Merit pay, tenure, all of those issues are the system is so huge that implementing something of that nature is going to have to be in very small steps as it goes through the process. It's just way too much to expect that we would alter the system that much. And so the answer to your question is yes and yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Unger.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that's interesting about this is apparently of all the governor's proposals, the merit pay proposal is the one that seems to have the most traction in terms of public perception, which is kind of a frightening thing. The other thing is that if those two proposals actually did go through, I think that would be a huge unfunded mandate for us to have to go back and look at how we're doing our evaluation system and how we would implement merit pay, if a merit pay could even be implemented in a fair fashion. And certainly we'd be talking several thousand dollars in terms of unfunded mandates for our school district alone.
It would create a huge unfunded liability for us that we would be required to do it, and how we would get recompensed for that or how that would be handled financially, I have no clue. I think, though, that Mr. Unger's correct that one of the proposals he made.
The other thing, and I don't know if you've spoken about this, but I'll talk a little bit about this later, but the idea of shifting the teacher retirement from a defined benefit to a defined contribution plan. And one of the things that concerned me about that discussion, my understanding is that districts would be responsible for the fiduciary requirements of that, and that can't be shifted to STRS or PERS, who have the expertise in their areas, which means not only an unfunded mandate for us on those other issues, but we could potentially be held liable for, I'm thinking, for downturns in the stock market if we're required to manage people's 403s, and that concerns me greatly as well.
Mrs. Dickinson.
I just wanted to say that it seems like democracy is supposed to be people, you know, have an idea and want to bring a change, so they go out there with their petitions and get signatures, which is very distorted in this process where people are paid to get signatures. They don't really understand the issues. If you talk to some of them, they don't really know what it is. They just want you to sign it. So people sign these things, they don't really understand it either, and they vote on them and don't understand it. But I think we don't have control over this, but I think petitioners should have to be doing that from their heart and what their drive is, and not, we shouldn't have people paid to get signatures in our society.
Thank you. Okay, moving on. Public hearing. Determination of sufficient textbooks and instructional materials. Dr. Matakovich?
Thank you, Madam President. This is a public hearing where no action on the board's part is required. This hearing provides public testimony for determination of sufficient textbooks and instructional materials. We are under the requirements of two programs, the Instructional Materials Funding Realignment Program and the Williams Settlement, which just has become law in September of 2004. As a result of these two requirements, we need to certify to you that we are sufficient in the areas of reading, language, arts, math, history, social science, and science, that we have adopted materials that meet the state adoption requirements. And currently, we are sufficient in K-12 math, K-12 reading, language, arts, ELD, 7-12 history, social science, and 4-12 science. The district does not meet the sufficiency requirement in the areas of K-6 history, social science, and K-3 science. We have a plan in place to become sufficient in these areas, and you'll see that as an attachment in this document. We, as you know, plan through our curriculum council and our instructional materials plan to provide adequate funding over the course of several years for our adoptions. And so we have in place plans to become sufficient in 05, 06, and 06, 07 in those two areas. Now, with the Williams settlement just coming before us, we are to provide state-adopted foreign language textbooks as well as health textbooks in our classrooms. As you know, with the superintendent's budget, we have been able to begin the process of adopting foreign language textbooks for the 9-12 program, which is where we provide foreign language. We will be coming before you at the end of this school year with a recommendation to adopt materials for our 7-12 foreign language program. As well, our K-12 health requirement, we are in the process of shaping our committee and will be coming to you with a recommendation next year to become sufficient in the area of health at the end of our next school year. Another Williams requirement is in the area of sufficient quantities of science lab equipment in our 912 program. In reviewing this requirement with our department chairs in both high schools, in our three high schools, we find that we have sufficient equipment to meet the needs of the curriculum in our science labs. So we've provided you a plan here that shows how we are going to become sufficient in history, social science, science, foreign language, and health. And so tonight, the public has an opportunity to comment on this.
Thank you. Is there anyone from the public that would like to comment?
That's really all it's for. You'd actually formally open the public hearing. Right.
Okay. The public hearing is open now on this issue. Is there anyone from the public that wishes to comment?
It's those districts in the first wave. Okay. Thank you.
Dr. Matakovich, so the timing of the action plans, are they a result of the availability of the instructional materials to go through our curriculum adoption process, or is it just, not, I shouldn't say just, or is it our trying to just schedule the amount of curriculum adoption and textbook adoptions that we have to do through our curriculum council?
Thank you for making that point. We're required to meet the state frameworks as well as the newly adopted list of curriculum materials. So slated in history social science in November of 05, we'll have a list of approved materials. So we'll be positioned to be able to make that adoption based on a newly formed list. We didn't want to come to you with a recommendation prior to that time period, because that then we would be adopting materials that wouldn't be compliant in November of 05. Same thing with science.
Thank you. That clarifies it for me.
Thank you. Thank you.
Mrs. Botwin.
Thank you. I understand, and it makes a lot of sense that the logical thing to do would be to make the adoption after we have the state frameworks, the books come out, and we know it's there. But some areas it's going to be a year, some other areas 2 years and 3 years. Mary, does this mean then that at this present time, the district does not meet the sufficiency requirement in the following areas, K through 6, history, social science, etc.? Do we don't have enough books for the kids? Is that what the...
We have textbooks for all of our children, Mrs. Botwin, but they are not on the current approved list.
Okay, so all of our kids, every single kid does have an available textbook.
Correct.
All right, I consider that sufficiency, so I move that we accept this. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Resolution. I have to make a resolution. Okay, and then we move to... Okay, item number three, again a public hearing. Proposed reopener agreement with California School Employees Association, Chapter 89. And this is presented by Mr. Robinette.
CSEA Chapter 89 reached unanimous agreement on their reopener, and so this is an opportunity for the public to comment, and later this appears as an action consent item for the board to also ratify the agreement.
Thank you. We'll open the public hearing. Is there any member of the public here that wishes to address the board on this matter? Seeing no one, we'll close the public hearing. Any member of the board? Board discussion? Dr. Valentine? No? Okay. Item 4, resolution number 070405, positive certificate of adequate funding, second interim report for 2004-2005 as of January 31st, 2005. And that would be Mr. Miller.
Do anything.
I'm
apologize.
That's right.
The budget that we discussed at our previous board meeting tonight, we were coming forth and asking you to approve the second interim certification, which basically states that we have the financial resources to meet our current year's and two future years' worth of obligations as projected in the second interim.
I move approval of resolution.
Second.
Okay, moved by Mr. Unger, seconded by Dr. Olker. This is a roll call vote. Mrs. Holmes?
I move approval of resolution number 070405, positive certificate of adequate funding, second interim report for 2004-2005.
And is that what you seconded, Dr. Olker?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Mrs. Holmes?
Mr. Unger?
Aye.
Dr. Olker?
Yes.
Mrs. Dickinson?
Aye.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Mr. Millar?
Aye.
Mrs. Botwin?
Yes.
Mr. Marinello? Passes 7-0.
Thank you. Item 5, another resolution, number 080405, Absolutely Incredible Kid Day, March 17, 2005. And that is presented by Dr. Valentine.
Madam President, the Campfire USA Central Coast Council has requested that San Luis Coastal Unified School District adopt the attached resolution proclaiming March
5, Absolutely Incredible Kid Day. Was moved by Dr. Olker, seconded by Mr. Marinello, but we have comment from Mr. Unger.
Yeah, and I think it's a great idea, and I am in support of Absolutely Incredible Kid Day. I do have some concern about the wording of the resolution. I'm specifically concerned about item paragraph number 3, whereas Campfire USA wants to honor the children involved in Campfire and all kids nationwide. What I'm concerned about that is it sounds like the resolution is coming from Campfire, not from the San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board of Trustees. And I would ask an amendment to the resolution that we strike that whereas. Also, I would ask that the sixth whereas, where it says Campfire's USA goal is for every child, I like that, but I would also ask that we amend the resolution to state whereas the goal of Absolutely Incredible Day is.
I'll accept those amendments.
So, Mr. Marinello, your second still holds? Okay, so we have a motion by Dr. Olker, second by Mr. Marinello. Mrs. Holmes?
Dr. Olker?
Yo.
Mr. Marinello? Mrs. Botwin? Mr. Millar?
Aye.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Mrs. Dickinson? Mr. Unger?
Did she call you, Olker?
Yeah, she did. I'm absolutely ecstatic that we've approved that.
I just had a question on that. Is it too late to ask a question about it?
Well, go ahead.
How do we ensure all kids get letters? It's not organized, it's just random.
This is a resolution of encouragement.
We have to be alert for all these opportunities and cover the kids. Sounds good.
We're aware of it, and we should spread the word, and those watching hopefully will spread the word. And we can set an example by writing letters ourselves. Okay, action discussion, item 6. Interview selection process for Assistant Superintendent for Educational Services. And that is presented by Mr. Robinette.
In a previous meeting, the board, some members of the board expressed a possible interest in being involved in the Assistant Superintendent of Educational Services position. This item is on the agenda. To give you that opportunity to discuss and provide direction to us in the event that, that the board in any way wants to be involved in that selection process. By way of information, the applications for the position closed last Friday, the 11th, and we began the paper screening process yesterday and today. We have candidates selected, and at this point it will be we'll take whatever direction the board might have should any members of the board wish to be involved in the rest of the process.
Thank you.
We received 25 applications for the position.
Okay, Mrs. Botwin.
I don't know how this would, how we could do this, but I don't particularly want that we should sit in on the interview either, and I agree with the rest of the board. I think I was the only one that wanted that, although I think it would have been nice. For this reason, I would like a some way, if possible, to work out some way that I understand there's seven up for the, or there's a certain number that up for the final interview, and they're going to be working, and it's clear to them that they're going to be working for the superintendent who's going to be interviewing them. But they aren't. We aren't going to have met them, nor have they met us. Now, either one, they may see us and run screaming away. We may see him or her and run screaming away. But I think in some point in time, before the final selection is made, I think it would be very nice for one or more board members even just to meet with each one of them, have a cup of coffee, and then kind of communicate back to the rest of us that so that this person is exposed to the members of the board who indirectly they're going to be working for. Otherwise, I think there's a, it's a slightly different situation with your attitude in terms of we're invisible. Anybody else want to jump right in on that?
Mr. Marinello?
I go back to, we hired the superintendent to run the district, and I don't want to micromanage the superintendent's choice of his new superintendent of educational services. Any person who is applying to any district at a level in this, within the superintendency that has not got an awareness of a school board or the way that board functions. And
let's clarify this again. I'm not talking about, and that was what you said was good. I'm saying in a social situation of some sort or another, one at a time, or none if the board decides not to, has nothing to do with undermining the superintendent or anybody else. It has to do with seeing this person and maybe developing just a little bit of rapport with any of these people ahead of time. And if the other board members disagree with me, then that's fine. It's up to you. I just feel that I don't want to have somebody come walking up that podium and say, "Hi, I'm the new assistant superintendent." I think that's kind of cold.
Mr. Marinello.
The question I would have, I get, you know, and eventually we will meet and greet and sit down for beverages and whatever with that individual perhaps, but what would be the purpose of the board becoming involved at any point in the selection process or at any point between the paper screening and the superintendent's ultimate decision as to who the assistant would be?
Is there any other board comment? Dr. Valentine?
I just want to make sure that the purpose of bringing this forward was to provide staff with some direction. At this point, I'm hearing that we will process this as an administrative process and bring the candidate to the board at the time the candidate is selected.
Thank you. Okay, item 7. Yes, you were otherwise engaged. Approval of pay increase for substitute teachers. Is there any member, Ms. Robinette, you're back. When I have my reading glasses on, I can't see you, so it's such a surprise.
If you want any clarification on this issue, I'm happy to provide it on this item.
Does anyone require clarification from Mr. Robinette? Seeing no one, I'll open it to public comment if there's anyone who wishes to speak. Mrs. Andreen.
Thank you. I am Patty Andreen, and I did want to comment on the recommendation. When this was last discussed, there was no recommendation to raise the pay for long-term subs, and I'm happy to see that they are included. My understanding from talking to students and from talking to teachers who have been long-term subs is that it's a difficult and important relationship that we want to recognize with a raise. The long-term sub does a lot more than just a daily sub, and you know they really do have to get control of the classroom in order to make it work. So I think we want the best people around applying for those positions and accepting them when we ask them to. So that, I think, would be the minimum raise that I would like to see for that. And I know you guys know the finances and know what you can afford to put out for these, but I'm hoping that you will give what you can to the long terms. Thanks.
Thank you. Board discussion. Mrs. Dickinson.
Well, I made some points last week. I'm not going to remake them, but I really think 90 is a minimum on the daily sub, and I'd like the long term to be at least 110. And I was comparing it with we talk about a daily rate, but if you break it down, it's 7-hour day, and it's really 7.5, isn't it, counting lunch? I know they're not paid for lunch, but if it's like when I'm teaching, by the time the kids leave and start coming back, you have about 10 minutes.
But anyway, 7 hours and 40 minutes for secondary and 7 hours and 10 minutes for elementary.
Okay.
That includes lunch.
It's 7 hours.
Inclusive of lunch.
Inclusive of lunch. Well, only with 7 hours, with an $85, it's $12.14 an hour. And with $90, it's $12.86 an hour. And I was comparing it with some of these other people who are substitutes. And it's less than bus driver sub, retired clerical working in clerical classes up to administrative secretary sub. These are all subs up here, right? Retired clerical working as administrative secretary, fiscal interpreter, library tech. It's less than all those. And it's less than maintenance and operations, unless we give the $90 a day, in which case it's slightly more, but it's right in the ballpark of that. And I wanted to say that custodians and maintenance people are so important, and the grounds and the environment and the plants and the cleanliness of the facility, you know, is so important. So we expect a lot, and I think that would be an absolute minimum raise to be at all in the realm of justice. Even that is meager, really, for what we're expecting. So that's what I would like to see.
Okay, I don't know who was down first. Mr. Unger?
I would support the staff recommendation for $85 at this point. I would support Mrs. Dickinson's recommendation for increasing the long-term sub pay. The reason I would not at this time support the $90 increase is because I want to wait until we go through the budget adoption process. There are $30,000 becoming $60,000 when there are other things that I have an interest in at this time, looking at our budget process. I'm not willing to spend that additional money right now. There are some things that I have an interest in advancing to the board when that time comes, and I'd like to see if that money would be available for some of my interests as well. So I would support the $85. I would absolutely support $110, though, for the long-term subs, because I think that requires a greater commitment and a greater level, not necessarily a greater level of skill, but certainly a greater commitment to the students, because we're talking about 20 days of continuous service at that point, which implies, if nothing else, lesson plans and long-term planning and things like that.
Okay, I'm going to exercise my option to jump in at this point. I wholly and totally support Mrs. Dickinson's request that we go to 90 and 110. We're talking about certificated teachers who are on the first line with our children, who have not been adjusted for 12 years, if I'm understanding correctly, 9 years, still far too long. The the cost, if the information that was provided to us, potentially the cost if to go to $90 for the daily sub and $110 for the long-term sub, the cost that the school sites would have to bear is estimated to be approximately $400 a year. This is from what canvassing I've been able to do and discussion I've had, this is a manageable amount of money for the schools to absorb. I think it's only right and fair that we dignify the work of these teachers, and I totally support the 90 and 110. Mrs. Botwin.
I'm right behind Adrienne, and I'm right behind Marilyn. My first year out here, when we moved out here, was after 20-some years of teaching back in the Midwest, and for one year I subbed both here in San Luis and in Lucia Mar, and I was looking for a job actually as a chambermaid at the end of that year. It was the worst year of my life. The kids, hey, sub! Oh, free bait! Oh, man, let's go! And it was the most difficult thing I had ever done in my life, and I love teaching. I just did not like subbing. And I got to the point that I had to have developed the protective means, which I did very quickly. But in any sub you talk to will tell you, if she's a long-term, that's different. You know, you establish a rapport. You get the same group of kids every day, and they realize that you're there, and you're a replacement. If you're coming in for one day or a two-day, it just doesn't work out. It really doesn't. And I used to threaten my students when I was at Morro Bay, and when I missed class or missed a day, I used to threaten them that if any one of their names was down on the list from the sub, and I left a note, that they would suffer dire punishment with me when I came back. And they did. I worked out these little things. You know, they didn't get their little candy bar that day or whatever. But I think that the stamina and the determination, the energy, the enthusiasm. We have some people that are better than others always in every career and every situation we do. But most of our subs are phenomenal. And why anybody would dedicate themselves to doing that, I think they deserve much more than 90. But for 9 years, we have not given them a raise. If this would satisfy Chris Unger, I'd go for a two-year increase. 85 this year and 90 next year, and included with that would be if we don't get the money as we have on the other contracts, if we don't get a certain amount of money from so on and so forth as we have on the others. But, excuse me, I'd like to make a motion, we don't have to stop discussing it, that we go ahead and make a change here, amend this to $90 and $110 for the long term.
$8. I mean, the reality is that our administration came to us with a recommendation that we raise to $85 an hour to acquire a labor resource that we're not having any problem acquiring, and we seem to be getting a little confused about what our job is up here. So that's all I wanted to say.
And to that I would say that that is simply an administrative recommendation, but it is within the board's purview to accept or modify that recommendation as they see fit.
There are many things that are within the board's purview that we defer to administration, and that's part of what leads to the governing relationship that develops between a board and an administration, and I think we have a darn good relationship, and we will continue to well after this agenda item is passed, but everything is basically the board's purview in what do we do with those things.
Mr. Marinello?
As people are speaking, a lot of things are going through my mind, like I never substitute Tot. Ain't no way it's ever going to happen. The only time I substitute is as the assistant principal, and when I go in there, nobody gives me any garbage because I'll kill them or give them detention or worse. But most of my teaching was in high school science, and I could never get a sub to understand thermodynamics. I just couldn't find one. Which probably has no bearing at all on this thing. And my entire argument is, it's been a long time. They do a good job for us. No, there's not a shortage of the resource, but I think there's an opportunity for the board or a board to show to show a certain sentiment of support, and that's why I would go with a 90 and 110, because it's chump change to the board on the scale of the management that the board does with the budget, albeit a case of micromanagement. I think it provides us with an opportunity to take a stand that I would support.
Mrs. Botwin?
Madam Chair, if we could, I'll move the previous question and we'll take a vote at this time on that issue.
Is there public comment on this issue? Okay, seeing none. So the question's... Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Unger.
I wanted to ask Mr. Robinette a question. How many long-term subs do we actually have, understanding that it varies from time to time?
How many long-term subs do we have currently employed?
Yeah, that. Do you have a rough idea about that?
Quitting you on the spot. Probably four or five in the district right now.
Four or five. Is that, in your experience, is that pretty typical?
Yeah, our long-term subs are usually for extended illnesses or maternity leaves. I mean, those are the two most common reasons we would have somebody in a place for more than 20 days. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, half a dozen at the most at any one time, I would think.
Okay. And when we pay a long-term sub, the long-term sub pay is that reduces the amount of money that a person going on a long-term leave, paid leave, would get. Is that not correct?
Depends on their leave bank. If a person is out on a qualified illness and they have the number of sick days to cover it, then there would be no effect on the employee. But if an employee is out of their sick leave allocation, or if it's a reason that is not covered by contract for leave, then they would pay the differential. So the employee would get their salary less the long-term sub rate.
And how long does that go on?
It can go on as long as the legitimate leave is in place. So if it's a medical illness, it can go on up to a two-year period.
Thank you.
The actual contract would say 100 days of differential leave, but people come and go, but there's up to 100 days or 6 months of differential leave, typically.
So if we significantly now raise the long-term subpay, that directly comes out of, could potentially directly come out of those teachers who are being forced to take long-term sub leave, potentially if they had run out of their sick days. Is that not correct?
It would be deducted from their salary.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, we call the question. We have a motion on the table to raise the short-term sub rate to $90 a day and the long-term sub rate to $110 a day. Those in favor? Aye. Opposed? I believe it passes 4. 15, acceptance of donations. 16, approval of disposition of surplus property. 17, approval of furniture and equipment requests. 18, approval of purchase orders. 19, acceptance of evaluation report for Pacheco Elementary School as a two-way foreign language alternative school. 20, approval of revisions to board policy 1312.3, community relations uniform complaint procedures. 21, approval of revisions to board policy 4113, certificated personnel assignment. 23, approval of amendment to lease agreement. Let me get my cadence right there. Approval of amendment to lease agreement dated June 24th, 2003 with J.H. Edwards Company for a portion of Sunnyside Elementary School campus. Item 24, approve. Okay.
Move to approve items 8, 10 through 12, 15 through 21, and 23.
Second. Moved by Dr. Olker, seconded by myself. Those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Mrs. Botwin, you pulled item 9.
Yes, I did. Thank you. There were a couple of things that I wanted. I'm in agreement with item 9. I'm in agreement with the recommendation, which I will follow through with. But there were several things I wanted us to think about. It's going to take us a while, apparently, unless somebody's jumped out of the woodwork, for a reading recovery teacher to step in for next year. And I would like to know some history that we've had here in the district. For example, Ron Brown last time said that approximately the reading recovery has been in place for about 12 years, and that this year, I'm not sure, Ron, it was at about 100. Wayne, thank you. Was it about 100 students that are being serviced by reading recovery this year? Okay. And I thought I would like us, while we go ahead in the pursuit of the recommendation here, finding a reading recovery lead teacher for the 2005-2006 school year, that we would see the background, when it started, how much the program cost us per year, how many reading recovery teachers we had each year, in particular the number of students that were serviced by this program each year. And then with that in mind, what I thought was, if we cannot find equitably, I don't want us to go to spending $100,000 to send somebody off to educate them, to bring them back, and so on and so forth. It's a lot of money, and it's going to be more than 1 year. But I thought, while we're in the process of looking, we could also then see the figures, the numbers, the money, and look at some programs, the other programs that are offered on reading programs.
Okay, Mrs. Botwin, I think that at the last meeting we had the same discussion, you made the same comments.
I did, but this time I'm asking that while I'm going to move the recommendation, but while they are looking, that we get this information in a Friday packet. Then we look at it, make some decisions of who we want to, and then maybe start to look at other programs.
Mr. Miller?
Madam President, that's fine. That information could be available, but within a limited time period. In 2000, the state changed the way that we report our financial data. It's called the SACS code, the State Accountability Code Structure. And all of the information prior to 2000 is contained in the old system, which is archived. And should the board wish to see that, we would have to pay a fee to get it unarchived, and then we would have to translate to our current computer system, and it would be a lengthy and not costly, but cost something to do. The 2000-2001 data we currently have archived within our own system, we could readily reproduce that, and in fact have some of the data available for you on Friday, no problem.
That'd be fine.
Okay.
Yeah, no problem with that. So meanwhile, I'll go ahead and make the recommendation as it is here.
Second.
Yeah. Those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Item 13, that was pulled by several people. Mr. Unger?
Yeah, as I think those who have heard me bang the drum for CIF know, I have a strong interest in this. If we pass this consent item, we're saying that the provisions of Title V, Section 5.
Mrs. Dickinson.
Did you want to talk first, Mr. Robinette?
Well, if you'd like me to address any of those, I'm happy to attempt to.
Ask my question first, because he might answer that, too.
Okay, if you don't mind, we'll have Mrs. Dickinson.
I might have a question that you can answer, too. Not only you know, how they're trained, but I was curious how they're evaluated, because it says that a temporary athletic team coach shall verify knowledge, competencies, and qualifications in several areas, including but not limited to care and prevention of athletic injuries, coaching techniques, rules and regulations in the athletic activity being coached, and adolescent psychology. And I think this is not just to meet the law, but parents of athletes are very concerned about how their young people are treated and coached. And, you know, it is such a huge part of their life when they're in a sport, and it can be devastating or it can be wonderful. So how are they evaluated?
To address the first issue Mr. Unger raised, we have a what's called a coaching verification checklist that is completed by the employee personnel and the school site. There are four areas of Title V that we have to establish verification of. One is the care and prevention of injuries. There are several ways to validate that. The minimum requirement for all temporary coaches is a current first aid certification card and a current CPR card. So that can be obtained many ways, but coaches are not allowed to be involved without meeting that minimal standard. The second is coaching theory, and we require either college coursework in service or at least, again, the minimum standard is participation in the sport, having participated in the sport that the individual is going to be coaching. The third is that we have to certify that there is an understanding of the rules and regulations, and so our athletic directors are required to go over the school rules, the league rules, and the CIF rules, and the athletic directors and the principals of the high schools are routinely updated on any changes in CIF. So that would include some of the current issues having to do with steroid use, sportsmanship, behavior with students. The fourth area is knowledge of adolescent or child psychology, a much more difficult thing to quantify or to qualify someone for. But on our forum, we ask for completion of college-level coursework in adolescent or sports psychology, or completion of a seminar or workshop on human growth and development, or prior active involvement with youth in a school or community sports program. We're usually looking for somebody who has had experience working with youth in the past. In addition to those four requirements, we also require an H6 from the DMV because we make assumptions that our temporary coaches may be in a position of needing to drive students, so they must be cleared. They require training in bloodborne pathogens, and even if they're voluntary coaches, not paid, we still require a Department of Justice fingerprint clearance and tuberculosis clearance. So those are the requirements that we have for those. The second question, and I can answer questions about that. The second issue, we expect our principals to be involved in the evaluation of everybody that works under their school site, so they would be under the evaluation of the site principal.
Thank you. Mr. Unger?
I see that this has to be approved by April 1st, and unfortunately this is the last board meeting before April 1st. And usually I don't get upset about things, but I will say that I think these minimal requirements are not acceptable to me. I'm not sure how to do that. I don't think that a first aid card is care and prevention of athletic injuries, and I'm not sure that coach in Little League gives you coaching techniques, and the same thing with adolescent psychology. I feel, and I would ask that this, although we may need to approve this now, I think we need to do, from what you're suggesting, Mr. Robinette, I think we need to do a better job with our coaching, and I think we need to do a better job training our coaching, and I think we need to have more than minimal requirements. You know, when kids get out and play, they can get hurt, seriously hurt. Children can be killed, and I'd like to know what we can do to increase that, especially with our part-time coaches who are part-time coaches. I think our full-time coaches, we have an expectation that they are teachers in our district, and we can hold them to a higher standard. But our part-timers, I think we need to hold them to the high standard, and I think we need to have a plan to be able to train the coaches and to make sure that they're able to do the kind of job that we expect them to do with our children. Given that, I'm not sure what choices I have, whether to go ahead and approve this, because if we don't approve it, then I suppose that we're
coaches have experience in all these areas. The dilemma that we all face is we're really talking about wonderful coaches and then some individuals that just shouldn't be coaching. And as a board, I'm going to be addressing Adrian's question here. As a board, you have to be sure that your coaches are evaluated on a yearly basis, and that's done by the athletic director and the principal sitting down at the end of the season and saying, is this a positive environment for kids? Is the program going in the right direction? And if it's not, make change. So my two points would be that we can look into CIF. They have done a lot of research, a lot of work. They've had a lot of videos on in-servicing coaches and see how our program sets in. And then the evaluation process is something we need to continually work with the schools to be sure we have the right people in the right positions.
Dr. Olker.
I would second both of those concerns being brought forward at in the future. So, and then I'd move for approval at this point of item number 13.
Moved by Dr. Olker, seconded by Mr. Millar. Did you have a comment, Mr. Marinello?
Just that I would be very much in support of Mr. Unger's concerns.
Okay. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Mrs. Botwin?
Madam Chair, could we have that? Bill, would that be possible to have that, like, when you get it eventually in a Friday packet, that we could look it over?
I'll try to provide an update for Dr. Valentine for the Friday update. I'll make contact with CIF office tomorrow and see if I can get some information real quickly, and then I'll do a much more thorough study of the situation, though, in an upcoming update.
Thank you very much.
Okay, let's complete the vote. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes unanimously. Item 14, Mr. Marinello, did you pull that?
Yes, ma'am. I just wanted to draw everybody's attention to a couple issues that kind of stuck out for me. One was Laguna Middle School. If I'm not mistaken, this is a schedule very similar to the one that was voted up, then voted down in succession with some questionable behaviors associated therewith. It was now approved by 82% of the staff. Los Osos Middle School, 90%, went with the advisory period on Wednesdays. Morro Bay High, 80% to stay with the big block. San Luis High, a little better than 3 out of 4 teachers, stay with the trimester. And again, the kudos to the staff, because they're doing a 4-4-4, and they started out as a 4-4-3 in that earliest iteration of the trimester. So once again, thanks to the staff there.
Mr. Millar.
I don't know how it all came about, but since this is the secondary school schedule, I think we should avoid, if at all possible, next year having parents at Slo High think there's going to be a teacher work day and then have it canceled. Do you guys know what I'm talking about? About a month or so ago, apparently a lot of the parents thought there was going to be a 3-day weekend because Morro Bay had a in-service training and Slo High didn't. And originally people thought there was going to be that day at release, and then it turned out there wasn't going to be, and I heard about it a lot. So I don't know how it happened, but we should try to avoid doing it again next year.
Okay. Dr. Valentine?
Yeah, I think... part of the confusion, unless I'm corrected by Rick, is that the teacher work day is positioned at the end of the semester for Morro Bay High School, and it's positioned at the end of the second trimester for the San Luis Obispo High School. So when someone hears the high school is having a work day, the real question is which high school?
That's good. Mrs. Botway may have put her finger on it. She said it was the seniors.
Yeah. Mr. Marinello, you pulled this. Do you want to move acceptance?
Yes, ma'am. Move approval of item number 14.
Okay. Moved by Mr. Marinello, seconded by Dr. Olker. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. And item 24.
22.
Adrian. Oh, I beg your pardon. 22.
In this era when rights are eroding an opportunity here to just to read or look, lift up what we have in the civil and legal rights, I think is appropriate, just so we all know what they are. So do you guys mind if I read this very, very short thing that's our board policy? The Board of Education believes that the personal life of an employee is not an appropriate concern of the district, except as it may directly prevent the employee from performing his or her duties or responsibilities. An employee's religious or politicalized rights and responsibilities under the whistleblower laws, including the telephone number of the whistleblower hotline maintained by the Office of the California Attorney General. No employee shall use or attempt to use his or her official authority or influence to intimidate, threaten, coerce, or command another employee for the purpose of interfering with that employee's right to disclose improper governmental activity. Just so we all know what all of our rights are, I think they're important to protect and to know. Thank you for your patience. Caroline's sick, but...
Move to approve item number 22.
You read it very well, Adrienne. I was going to just ask you, your point is... But that was your point, just to read it so we could all
hear
it?
That is my point.
Okay.
So moved by Dr. Olker.
Second.
Seconded by myself.
Oh, sorry.
Those in favor?
I take it back.
Aye. Opposed?
Third.
You were a third, Mr. Marinella? Okay.
Third wheel.
Item 24.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I pulled this. I had called this morning and talked to Bill Brand about could he get us some background information on how many kids we've had on the Foreign Exchange Service in the last two, three, four, whatever years he could get. And he gave us a sheet here of the last 5 years, which I really applaud him for. And I was very pleased to, I just wanted to mention, in 2001, we had 8 exchange students. In 2002, we had 9. In 2003, we had 9. In 2003-04, we had 11. And this year, we have 14. And I'm very pleased. 10, 15 years ago, we had quite a number of them. And then they dipped down for various and sundry reasons. And now they seem to be slowly coming back up again. And this is an extraordinary program for any of you who have been involved with it that I would like to see us clearly continue to support. It's amazing the kind of effect you can have on a whole bunch of people because of one kid that comes here and spends a year and then goes back. And so... Anyway, so my recommendation is that we just say, good job, let's keep going and get more exchange students for our school district. Thank you.
Move to approve.
I move approval.
Number, second.
Moved by Mrs. Botwin, seconded by Dr. Olker. Those in favor? Aye. Opposed? Okay. Reports by board members and administrators. Mr. Unger.
Yeah, I was fortunate enough on Thursday to go to a meeting of the Tri-Counties Education Coalition, which is the oldest education coalition in California. It's San Luis Obispo, Santa Barbara, and Ventura counties. It's all groups involved in education. There was a meeting down in Goleta that was had representatives from AFT, CSBA, CSEA, ACSA, and the PTA addressing us on issues that are important in the state. And as Mr. Miller talked about, there was a lot of consternation about the governor's proposals. There were recommendations from all the groups that people not sign the petitions that are being circulated. After the meeting, I read in the Los Angeles Times that about 500 people got together in Ventura at the Ventura County Office of Education to protest the governor's actions. I think one of the things that should be pointed out is the governor's proposal to change STIRS from a defined benefit to a defined contribution program, and I mentioned the concern I have with the fiduciary responsibilities that the district could be forced to take. I think one of the other things that we need to recognize is that not only is, as I understand it, the proposal would eliminate police and fire, would eliminate the death benefits for police and firefighters, but I think it might also eliminate the STIRS disability benefit that teachers currently get. And that has me greatly concerned, and I think that that's something we need to keep an eye on. Also, I was fortunate enough to be able to go see our choirs in a competition at the PAC on Friday night, and as always, they did a great job. And then Sunday evening at the PAC, Mr. Lamprick did the send-off for Carnegie Hall, and they were ready to go, and they sounded fantastic to an almost full PAC. So good luck to those guys going off to New York on Friday.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay. I don't know who was down first. I'll start with you, Mr. Marinello.
Thank you. Couple things. One is I saw my first Recall Arnold bumper sticker in the faculty lot today where I work. Turnabout's fair play, I suppose. But I don't want to let today go by unnoticed. Today is March 15th.
Of all political stripes, taking cheap shots at public education. And the way they do it is they tee it up and they treat public education as some big monolith. There's 1,000-plus school districts in this state. They, out of one side of their mouth, talk about local control, and now the other side, they lump us all together. And this whole thing about teacher merit pay, I think, is mean-spirited, unworkable. It's just a new low in taking cheap shots at public education, and it really offended me, and I hope the public is smart enough to see through it. But again, I'd like to say that I attended the pancake breakfast for the FFA on Saturday, which was much more pleasant, and it was good to see all the students there. Thank you for letting me sound off.
Mrs. Botwin.
Thank you. I was interested in your saying, you said, finally said something I agreed with tonight, Walter, about the merit pay. That's right, exactly. I wanted to thank that we got in our Friday handout the graduation rates for San Luis Obispo High School. The number of students enrolled as freshmen in 2000 and then carried it through to graduation. That was wonderful. And I think I would like to have that, but also, if we could, if the board would agree, that we have the same thing for Morro Bay High, and that we get one every year out of that whole list of students, basically. I mean, we had kids who went to jail, and kids who went to adult school, and all kinds of things, but two died, one was expelled, but 12 left destination unknown. And that was the only one that bothered me, that 12 people just split. It would be nice to know what happened, where they went, and why. But nonetheless, these are good facts for us to have, so we know that the students that were lost between year 2000 and graduation, where they were. The other thing I wanted to mention was I went to Sensheimer Thursday night for the presentation about the reassignment of the Arbor's students to Los Ranchos. And it was very nicely done. The staff did a really good job. There were only about 7 parents there, but two of them, actually, I heard them saying to each other they were going to report back to quite a few others. So, and they didn't say it loud enough for the staff to hear, but the information that was given was very good. Although Brad gave us the bus service and how it would operate, taking the kids from the Arbors, and then they would have to go for a 10-minute drop-off, and then the kids that were going to go to Los Ranchos would have to get off that bus, wait 10 minutes, and then go on to Los Ranchos on another bus, whereas the kids on that bus then would go to Sensheimer. And that was one thing that disturbed him, the parents. They were very disturbed about these young kids having a 10-minute layover, standing around waiting. And it disturbed me, too, when I thought about it afterward. And Brad did not have the figures for the return trip. He said he was going to look into that and get that information out. But I think the general feeling was that the parents were, if certain small things like this can be worked out, they're very amenable to making a switch. I think they think the world of both schools, both Sensheimer and Los Ranchos, are wonderful. And it's basically a choice. Give them the better bus ride and they'll go to the one you want. Okay, thank you. I just wanted to make that comment.
Okay, and for myself, I would just add that I attended the WASC reception at Morro Bay High School a week ago this past Sunday, and it was I felt I was very proud of our school, our administration, the teachers that were involved. We've all had an opportunity to review the tremendous volume of work that they prepared for that study, and I understand that all indications are that Morro Bay High School was very well received, and we're awaiting final word. Thank you. So Dr. Valentine.
Yeah, I wanted to do a follow-up comment and thank Mrs. Botwin for sharing the information on accountability for students from our high school. Just to clarify for the board and for anybody that's listening, the question that came up is that we have a certain number of students that enter our high schools, in this case San Luis Obispo High School, as freshmen. And concerns had been expressed that by the time we got to seniors that we had somehow lost track of some number of students between the freshman year and the senior year. And I was hoping that the information, this is why I want to thank Mrs. Botwin, would bring the board to a comfort level that we have a pretty tight handle on virtually every student that enters as a freshman, and by the time they have reached their senior year, we know where everyone is. Some of them are with us, and some of them are elsewhere.
Let's adjourn for just a moment while we situate ourselves. I'm waiting for the screen. I need the high sign from Bob.
You're up.
Okay, the board is back in session. And we have convened for a study session regarding Pacific Beach High School model of delivery. Please.
Good evening, Madam President, board members, Dr. Valentine, Dr. Brand, Mr. Russell, and Mrs. Holmes out there in the audience. I'm happy to be here today to give a presentation on the delivery model for Pacific Beach High School. But first, I'd like to introduce my colleagues, without whom none of this would be possible, the teachers who meet with the students on a day-to-day basis. And I'd like to introduce them, if I could, Mr. Dan Kirk. He's only been here 32 years at Pacific Beach. He is the English department
Just
chair.
Just getting my wind.
Just getting his second wind, right? He is the chair of the English department. And Terry Jacobson, who is our math, science, and art department. Did I leave anything out?
Health.
Health. And health. A little P.E. Melissa Newman, who is our social studies teacher and mock trial coordinator. And finally, Jane Taylor, who is our library technician this year. She also wears a lot of hats. She's our webpage. She's our webmaster, our webpage designer, scholarship coordinator, and a lot of other hats that she wears that are just too numerous to mention. And missing tonight is Kimberly Tice Jensen, who is our wonderful school secretary, who had a previous engagement, and our custodian, Brian Yellen, who is unfortunately out ill for the last couple of weeks. I tried to get this down to 5 minutes. I was unable to. It's going to be probably closer to 9, but I'll try to be as brief as I can. The mission of Pacific Beach High School is to provide an alternative education model for our students who have been unsuccessful with the comprehensive high school experience. Generally, our students come to us on a referral basis from San Luis Obispo and Morro Bay High Schools. We also get referrals, however, from Templeton Independent Study Community School. And once the students are meet with me and the parents, they're assigned to a teacher advisor, which kind of makes us a little bit unique. The teacher advisor's role is to manage the student's education from the time they arrive at Pacific Beach until the time they leave. I often have kids come up to me and they want some kind of special deal, or they want some kind of special dispensation, and my first reaction to them is to say, you know, you're talking to the wrong person. You need to go talk to your advisor. If your advisor goes for it, then you have my approval. But the teacher advisor relationship is really critical, and we'll get into that a little bit more. Somebody asked me to profile a Pacific Beach student, and I was really kind of at a loss, because Pacific Beach really is a microcosm of Morro Bay and San Luis Obispo High Schools. We're just much smaller. We have kids on campus who are gate kids. We have students with IEPs. We have students who are designated as English language non-proficient, and of course we have a whole bunch of kids in between those. The one thing, though, that does make our students unique is every one of them comes to Pacific Beach credit deficient. So they will not graduate with their class unless they come to Pacific Beach, for example. One of the things that allows us to be an option for those kids is that we require fewer credits to graduate. San Luis Obispo High School is 255 this year, 270 next. Morro Bay is 230. Pacific Beach is 200. Now, the core courses are the same. Everybody is required to take 40 units of English, 30 units of math. The algebra requirement is the same, and so on. What is different, though, is that there are fewer elective credits required. Pacific Beach High School has a 6-year WASC accreditation, which is kind of rare. We're really proud of that. We're in the fifth year of us being a model continuation high school. And I introduced the staff already, but they're the ones that make it work at Pacific Beach. One of the things that really makes us unique is our size. And it's a luxury that other schools don't have, and I'm grateful we have, because what happens is that we get to really know the kids. We get to know their strength, their weaknesses. 15 Monday, Wednesday, Friday, they go through three periods where they work at their own pace through the curriculum under the guidance of the three teachers. So they'll rotate amongst the three teachers. Tuesday, Thursday, the curriculum is delivered with a modified block with direct teacher instruction on those 2 days. The afternoon class has a lot more flexibility to it. It really has about three components. The first component is those students who come to us in the middle or the beginning of a six-week grading session, we ask them to come in the afternoon. So what they do is from 12:55 until 3:20, they're in an afternoon program waiting for a seat in the morning program. We also have, we hold over some kids, too, who don't make their 9 credits. Kids are required to make at least 9 credits every 6 weeks. The ones that don't are required to come in the afternoon at least 2 days a week. That's a requirement. It's not something that's negotiable. They have to do that until they get their 9 credits. In addition to the morning program. The third group are students who we've learned over a period of time Pacific Beach is probably not going to be the route for them. They're 2 credits deficient. It may be simpler for them to get an adult school diploma than it is a PB diploma. Or it's more beneficial to them to work on a GED. So we have that program for kids in the afternoon. We have a number of our kids that, after counseling with them, we may put them in the PB into the GED program or the adult school diploma program. One of the things that we've done this year is that, you know, the fact is that we're going to have kids that are going to get neither. They're not going to get a GED, and they're not going to get a diploma. So what do we do with those kids? We have kids that are that age and that are approaching 18. So this year, with Jane's help, and Jane has led kids by the hand, every student who's a senior or who is close to 18, senior or not, we've required them to make application to Cuesta College online. So all the kids have been accepted into Cuesta. Now, whether they go or not is another issue, but we've required them to make application there. This year we also bought into the Eureka system, which I think a lot of you are familiar with. We had Melissa and Jane both took an extended amount of time and went through and studied the Eureka system, adapted our career portfolio to the Eureka program. Yes? I'm sorry. The Eureka program is a Melissa, help me out here. It's a career guidance program.
It's a career guidance and exploration program that has a variety of components. It's got a personality inventory, interest inventory, basic skills inventory, career exploration, college exploration, college comparisons, and so on. We took several components of the Eureka program that we require students to go through when they go through the steps in putting together their career portfolio. It's real helpful for them. There's also a resume builder and some other kinds of things in the Eureka program. It's pretty extensive. One of the things that impressed us the most about it, I think, was if you narrow down to a career or a selection of several careers, you might try to figure out which one takes the most school, which one pays the most money, which one has the most jobs. What school might I go to? How about one, our friend Ben, that you know, got interested in being a neurologist and is interested in electroencephalograph technician kinds of positions and started to look about what schools he might go to that could avail him of that training. And he was quite pleased to find out that some of our local institutions offer training there, so, for example.
Thank you. One of the things we're looking at for next year is doing a job shadow, a requirement for our seniors. Morro Bay is already doing that. We'd like to kind of piggyback on their success with that. We're also going to add an exit interview. And what that entails is that students, seniors, after they've completed their portfolio, will present it to a committee of community members as a final exit before they graduate. This year we've also tried to really create a closer relationship with Cuesta College. We've had Jane has been instrumental in arranging for some guest speakers from Cuesta. We've had academic counselors. We've had financial aid counselors. We've had Gary Villa came to talk about his auto program at Cuesta College. We also had Greg Halfman called me in the summer and wanted to know if we had knew of anybody who could do some videotaping. And mainly he asked me in conjunction with the RLP, and I said, well, we've got kids that can do that. And so we had four of our kids. Yeah, would you, please?
We had four students that went to help with an organization called People First. And People First put together a DVD that is a self-advocacy training video for disabled adults. So our four students went and were basically techies for this organization, and they spent probably over a series of probably 12 weeks, they spent several mornings doing taping and working with the disabled adults and ended up with the video that will be broadcast on local access television. And their names will be in the credits, and they've made some really sort of tender associations with some of those disabled adults. It's been a really rewarding kind of experience for all. They'll be receiving some certificates of appreciation on Friday.
You know, we've had some success in some programs. One of them is our writing program. And I'd like to this year. Well, I'd rather have Dan talk about it, but we did get some awards. Dan, you want to talk about what happened?
Yeah, we had we submitted probably about 15 pieces. We have such a small population, so the percentage of which you know, when you send in 15 and you get three winners, that's pretty good. So we got three winners this year. We usually do pretty well in the writing. Our kids seem to have a lot to say in some very dramatic ways. So yeah, that was great. So we're waiting to hear it. It's at county now, and we've got a girl who wrote a poem that if it doesn't take first, I just don't know what.
You want to tell me an anecdote about someone thought they recognized it someplace?
Oh, we got a call from one of the judges who read this and said, now, I just want to be sure that she wrote this. And I said, well, yeah. He said, because I thought it came from the Norton Anthology. Now, I don't know if you know what the Norton Anthology, that is the, of English lit especially, or American lit, it's the Bible of survey lit classes. So what a comp, I told her that, and then she had to look up the Norton Anthology. So I gave her my Norton, and she said, he thought it came from here. So, yeah, it's great.
You know, we also, the mock trial is one of the things that we do participate in, and since we don't have a football team, you know, and our basketball team was disorganized some years ago, but we do have a mock trial team, and it's really fun to go to these things because, you know, it's fun because you get some kids that have not had a lot of recognition in their life, and they're going up against the finest that, you know, we're going up against Roy Grande High School. I mean, we haven't, but small schools do. Del Rio and Atascadero participates, and it's fun to see those kids go toe-to-toe with some of these kids and do and really distinguish themselves. And our own Walt Millar was our coach, and the Letterman jacket is coming. Well, why don't you tell us your reactions to that? I mean.
Well, thanks, Jack. We didn't work this out ahead of time.
It was such a terrific experience. Something you said at the beginning of your presentation sort of resonated with me. If you try to describe the typical Pacific Beach student, there isn't one. It is the most interesting mix of kids that I think I've seen at any campus. What they did at the second mock trial particularly, where, frankly, I think there was a fix in, but we came within 0.02 of a point of making it to the finals. We acquitted the defendant, and also there's a pretrial argument in this particular year to try to do away with an ordinance to control street racing on constitutional grounds, and we prevailed in that, too. And it was the most intense courtroom thing I've ever seen. I mean, it was North County Christian and ourselves, and it was just a tremendous experience. Some of these kids, our students, you're just blown away by them. The person who wrote the poem was one of the lawyers. And she's a very small person, but when she stood up in that courtroom and made her presentations and cross-examined her witnesses, it was just amazing to see the poise and the confidence and the power that these kids had and were experiencing. The attendance was incredible. These folks were there. You know, the entire school staff shows up.
You know, one of the things we do is that Terry wears the most hats, outside of Jane, probably. But the two of them wear a bunch of hats, and I'd like to, you know, it's really fun to go into Terry's class because I can help her do some algebra. And sometimes I'm even right every once in a while. But it's fun to go in there, and one of the things she does the, you want to talk about your anatomy program with the...
Oh, tell him.
But Mary's here. Well, I anatomy is my love and what I studied, and so when I am teaching it, I love to cut up little dead things, and luckily all the kids at PB do too, and I'm not unknown just to bring in my roadkill and check it out. But that's what I did in college, and that's what I love to do, and the kids, of course, love it, some in particular more than others. Kind of scary, and I count my scalpels at the end of the day. But no.
Yes, you do.
I do. We just do dissection, and it's just very normal, and it's... The kids love it, and to get the dissection, I don't really know what you want me to say. It's following all the...
Well, what other things you do, though? I mean, besides that?
Besides anatomy?
The art.
Yes, I do the fine art, and I have learned that over my 20 years of being at PB. I was hired by John Cook, Melissa and I were, and one day he walked in my room and said, oh, by the way, tomorrow you're an art teacher. And I went, oh, well, I'm a science teacher. I'm not an art teacher, but it's worked out beautifully. I have the messiest room on campus, because I have science one day and art the next day, so there's things everywhere, but we have a lot of fun. And now I also do the math and the algebra, and so that keeps me pretty darn busy, and it's all come back really fast. I'm happy to say the math and algebra and all that stuff, when you haven't had to do it for a while, I can now, it's right back, so I'm happy about that. And health and family living, I take care of that, and we have a lot of fun with that. We go into the communicable disease and all that, and then, of course, AIDS and STDs and all that kind of stuff, and these kids need that education, and we have a really good time covering that in an interesting way, and get EOC in there to do presentations, so we bring them in on campus. I do have a guest artist that the Teach Foundation usually funds through a grant that I write, and I've had Dixie Cavili now for several years, and then we go to the telethon, which has been a great success. And coming up, we hope this May to take... We used to do it when we had Charlie Pearson. He took the kids out to Special Olympics for another community service type, so we're going to try and do that again this spring in May when that comes up. So... That's about all I can think of at the moment.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Over here. How have your students been doing with the algebra requirement? Because that's one of the things that concerns me more, actually, than the high school exit exam, is students passing that.
Yes. Last year was probably the most difficult for us due to the nature of the way the students rotate through Pacific Beach. I don't necessarily get a student at the beginning of the year or even for 2 years for them to get through algebra. They come, and if they want to graduate that year and they've had no algebra, we've got to get right on it. Most of them are doing fine. They do fine. We really concentrate on it at the beginning of the year. I say, who are the seniors in particular who think they're going to graduate this year who need algebra? And I'm with them all year until that requirement is completed. The people it's hard for, and it's Pacific Beach is probably not the exception, are our special ed and some of the ELL students. Math is easier to teach those students, ELL. However, when you get up into the harder level, the reading and the word problems and things, you can have some difficulty in that. But so I monitor them all year, and they're with me specifically for algebra.
I wanted to speak to that just a little bit because it goes to the advisor-advisee system. I have a student who has, she's looking to graduate, and she has an IEP, and her area of difficulty is mathematics, and we're sweating bullets to help her with it. She does work with the resource teacher, and she works with Terry, and she works with me, and it takes a huge amount of time. It's a real struggle for her. I think we'll be able to get it done. And
her credits earned, areas of concern, and so we really keep track of every single kid. But it's 50 kids and plus our afternoon, so it's not a backbreaking job to know them and to follow them. But it does take a good 3 or 4 hours to, go through that. And I think it's very special that we did that. We started that years and years and years ago, and found, I don't know, I stole it from somebody somewhere along the line, like we do. Somebody had that good idea in a continuation school somewhere else, and it just makes perfect sense, because I think that the counseling and is almost as important as the curriculum, the academics, is just keeping a hand on these guys, because there's a lot more going on than just their academic and credit deficiency.
I had a question about the special ed. You have maybe I missed this in your introduction, but is it part-time resource teacher that's not here tonight, but how does that work? Do you want to talk about special ed just a little bit? How many kids and how the IEPs work and that type of thing?
We have a 0.2 FTE, which is a one-fifth time special ed teacher. Presently, we have about 5 or 6 kids with IEPs. We also have, in years past, and it's no longer the case, but when students went to Templeton Independent Study, they asked that they have their IEPs dismissed. And so normally that happens. So we have some kids, too, who went to Templeton Independent Study and have come back to us who have dismissed IEPs. We're in the process of looking at those to see if they need to be, reevaluated. But the one-fifth FTE, she comes twice a week. She works with our kids. She manages their caseload. We also have the luxury of having an special ed aide who just happens to be a credentialed teacher who's retired, and she's amazing. We're very fortunate to have her, and she works with our at-risk kids in regards to reading skills and writing skills, and she and I work with the kids in math, but she's done a really good job. So we have a pretty good program for dealing with those few kids that we have that are at risk, and a pretty good special ed program to boot.
Sounds like you're an instructional assistant as well as principal.
It's fun for me. I was a teacher for a long time, and I really get a kick out, especially when I can go in and what's neat is you go in and you see some really wonderful discussions. And I'm in Dan's class, and he's doing Shakespeare, and there was something that they were talking about. It was a role of women, and I thought to myself, God, this is such a controversial topic. I hope Dan digs into it. And I mean, the thought didn't leave my head. And Dan's there, and he's talking about, well, let's go with this. How are women portrayed in this particular play? Which I thought, I mean, that's what education is all about. It's about changing behavior, changing attitudes. And it happens in every classroom, and it's fun. It's fun for me to get out. I wish I could spend more time, but, you know, there's other things I need to do as well. But anyway, hopefully that answered your question. I'd like to introduce Jane. This is Jane Taylor. She's new this year, and I don't want to put her on the spot, but Jane has just done, I really appreciate her because she's done a great job in doing a whole bunch of different things that are really critical. They're the icing on the cake for Pacific Beach, and I'd like for her to talk about scholarships, if you would. Jane, would you talk about scholarships a little bit?
Well, I am not prepared for this at all. The scholarship process, we have about 10 different organizations. Last year, we gave away, they gave away, the organizations, like $11,000 to our students to continue at Quest or a vocational school or what they might be interested in. And we had 17 of our seniors apply this year, which seemed like a good number. And it's a challenge. I'd like to say I've just started, you know, working at Pacific Beach in September, and this has been a learning experience for me. It's a totally different situation, and I'm just amazed at the special attention that the students receive there and the quality of the education they're getting there.
I just want to add that I've had the opportunity, and Caroline too, at graduations and other times to hear the kids talk about and acknowledge the scholarships that they're getting, and it means a lot to them. It's not only financial assistance for them to continue their education, but it's a recognition, an additional recognition of what they've accomplished, and I've always been really impressed with how much that meant to the kids.
Yeah, you know, and finally, one of the things that impresses me about Pacific Beach is that you can't be a Pacific Beach unless you're willing to multitask, unless you're willing to do a whole bunch of different things. You know, Dan not only does English, he does geometry, he does PE. So one minute you're seeing him, he's talking about Shakespeare. The next minute he's out, you know, cheering kids on in a volleyball game. Terry does the same thing. Terry, you know, it's interesting to see a scientist who also likes art. You know, and somehow that it doesn't go together, but it works, and it works for her. Melissa does, I mean, takes the most pleasure in social studies, but she also has become an expert in Photoshop. I mean, of all things. I mean, she puts together the great collages. You probably have one in your envelope there.
We have Bob do it to a close.
I wish you would. In fact, she makes posters for us. Go ahead. You want to add something to that?
I just wanted to say that we were fortunate this year to get a wide carriage printer, and so it has given us the opportunity to make large posters. One of the project students did was they created storyboards about the Russian Revolution, and then were required to create posters about them and then cast them with modern day actors. But yeah, that was fun. I really enjoy playing with Photoshop. But the career portfolios, the students are required to create a cover page, and so I work with them with Photoshop and creating the cover pages. And yeah, it's a great creative outlet. It's really attractive to teens, and especially at-risk teens, I think, because results are instant, but not necessarily permanent. There's this wonderful thing called edit undo.
And what's neat is that we had a girl come in who the predictions were she wouldn't be successful, and she's quite an artist. And one of the things she did was that she came in and brought one of her artworks, and Melissa worked with her putting it in sections, right? So you section it onto the hard drive, and we printed out with a wide carriage printer, and it turned out, I mean, the girl was just blown away by seeing her artwork in a poster form. The other thing is that when Jane came on board, you know, the job that Jane does is really critical. It's a support job, and she works really closely with the kids on not only the scholarships, she helps with the testing. I mean, she just does a whole bunch of different things. She arranges for visitors to come. She's kind of our liaison with Hancock and Cuesta. And it's something that we don't have time to do. Jane does it, but it makes our program really more responsive and relevant for kids. Finally, I'd like for Dan just to take a minute and talk about his experience with As You Like It, right?
Yeah. We're very fortunate, the three of us, that every year the Teach Foundation awards us grants. And year after year, the other part of what I do is I take my kids down to see a Shakespeare play at PCPA. Interestingly, I think I've done it for about the last 14 years, every year. And PCPA just doesn't give out tickets. Schools sort of rotate through. You don't get it 2 years in a row. We've gotten it almost straight for about 14, I think. And it's very unique. And the reason I think that we get it is that there aren't a lot of us. I take 20. Maybe that's it after all. But they're so well-behaved, and they love the play. So this year we did go to see the production of As You Like It, which was, by the way, an excellent production, I thought. And we studied it beforehand, and now we're going to act it. We're going to present some scenes, about 14 scenes from it. We're working on it now.
We're going to videotape it?
Yeah, we'll okay. Video it.
Good. We're happy to answer any questions you might have.
I just wanted to, something Dan said, and I wanted to ask all of you, how important do you think the 6-week marking period is? I know that for my student, it was a time chunk that he could identify with, and it really helped him a lot, and I'm just kind of interested in your opinions about that.
That's exactly right. It's short term. The kids can see the end. Even though they wait sometimes till the 4th or 5th week just to really get going. But they, you know, it's immediate. They get a feedback a lot more quickly than in a long semester. And I think it sort of works out. The trimester works that way, too, as I'm told from my buddies up at Slo High. The kids every 3 weeks or so, they're kind of evaluated, but ours is a complete evaluation every 6, and so we always adjust their graduation timeline based on that every 6.
If you need an audience for your little acts from As You Like It, just come on down to Rio Grande High School. I'm sure we can work out an audience for you.
Yeah, I would just, if there's any people from the community that are watching this on the video, that I'd strongly recommend to go to Pacific Beach High School's graduation, because if you want to see how public education can make impact on the lives of these kids, if you go to a regular high school graduation, it's just kind of, you know, you get one kid after another, their name gets called, they get a handshake, and they move along the line, and that's it. But at Pacific Beach, you get a story. You hear all these kids, what kind of social situation that they're in, what kind of obstacles that they've managed to surmount to obtain a high school education. And it's a really emotional experience. And I'm not a particularly emotional guy, but at the at Pacific Beach High School, graduations are really a moving experience.
Jack, I'd also like to just commend you and your staff for this presentation tonight. This is a dream for parents if you've not been there. It's safe. It's risk-free. And I want to be sure that everybody understands what I say, risk-free. I walked on that campus. I could tell the kids they were glowing. They were asking questions, and nothing that they asked was ignored. And when I talk about a parent's dream, I'm talking about Dan's continuous evaluation process that he's talking about. I'm talking about opportunities in Terry's class to do art and science in one environment, and the mock trial. Walt has been your cheerleader. You don't need cheerleaders, Jack, over there. We've heard the blow-by-blow. But the risk-free, and then the piece that I really like, because I've been in the business a long time and I've seen many alternative schools, it's safe. And that's so essential. Your environment is safe, it's risk-free, and it starts from the leader and right through the staff to the student. So I really commend you.
Thank you. And I had a parent come in today, and you know, you can't dissuade people from their opinions. And everyone has an opinion about Pacific Beach who knows about us. And she told me what her previous opinion was, and I explained the school program to her, and she said, "Well, I guess I changed my mind." But unless people experience the program, I'm not worried about what people think of us, to be honest with you, because I know what I think. I'm confident we have a great program in Pacific Beach, and we have great kids. I would stack our kids up against anybody. I mean, we have people come in from Cuesta. Honest to gosh, I was a teacher for over 30 years. I don't ever recall in an assembly not having to sit next to kids who are being fractious. I mean, at Pacific Beach, you can just relax, and the kids are respectful and well-behaved, and it is a safe place. I agree with you. We all feel safe, and so the kids. Anyway, I think I'm done.
Well, I just wanted to say that I was able to participate in your graduation last year, and I agree with Glenn that it was very moving. It's the sense of accomplishment that the kids feel is palpable. It's wonderful. It made me feel really good, and I hadn't even done anything except show up. So that I hope I'll be able to do that again this year. This is really kind of not a part of what we're doing, but I'm sure you have a wish list in your own minds. And I would love to have you share a few things, a few items off your wish list, if they come to mind, that would help you, things that possibly could be provided that would help you to better reach your students?
You know, I just want to add something, I can't answer your question directly, but what I will say, you made the statement that you weren't even there and didn't, I mean, you were there and you participated, but you know that we really feel supported by the board. I personally, you know a lot of you because I had the honor of having your kids at school, so there's no Pacific Beach. There's no doubt that the board supports us, and we feel that we really do feel the support, and I just want you to know that you know your contribution is a support that we feel from you and from Dr. Valentine and district administration because it's there and it is palpable. So we appreciate that. I don't know that I can answer your question, but I'm sure some people may have something they want to say.
Madam Chair?
Please.
Do you guys want to? That's an unfair question. All right, off the top of your head, you know what? Would you guys like some time to maybe put it together and then make a list, send it over, and we'll look at it in a Friday packet and that kind of thing?
Ready to go.
Okay.
I think there's an elephant here in the middle of this room, and it's called another teacher. You've heard about the relationship we build with our students, and it means more to us than anything. And with the loss of a teacher came a readjustment of our schedule in order to meet curricular needs and mandated minutes and all that kind of thing. What it did was, during the morning session, we're always all on. So if I have a student, and I happen to have a student who, for example, Jack alluded to her, she has developed severe health problems in this last marking period. Marking period, 6 weeks. She's made it to school 7 times. She's really ill. She's 18 years old. She's moved out of the house. She's on Medi-Cal. She can't get appointments. They're in Santa Maria. She waited 6 hours to get a dental appointment and then was not seen and turned away, and so on. I guess my point is she came to school in the afternoon, not her scheduled session, and I was able to have the opportunity to talk to her. One of the things we all miss is time for us to work individually with our advisees more than we're allowed to now. It's difficult to schedule the time. I don't imagine that it's going to happen for us, but I'll just put it out there.
My turn?
Thank you. Yes.
One thing before, Melissa, if you ever have a kid who has medical needs that don't seem to be able to be met, if you could let me know, because I can probably work, you know, I mean, I know a lot of the physicians and can call them up and say, hey, listen, would you see this kid for, you know, so if, call me. Sure.
I'm with Melissa on this as well. When we lost our fourth faculty member, it put the curriculum, you know, 25% of our curriculum on three of us. When the curriculum responsibility goes up, the counseling responsibility gets shoved aside. And so that we had to absorb that 25% instead of four, now there's three. It really, that's what's happened. I'm teaching geometry. Come on. I'm good at it. But it really does, it puts a lot of emphasis on more on curriculum and less on the ability to counsel kids.
I guess it's related to that. One of the things that would make our job easier up here is if we boosted the enrollment at Pacific Beach. And, of course, if we were to do that, we want to do it in a way that's where you're getting students that are consistent with the program and the support you can give them. Where we run into crunches sometimes, and it's really a dilemma, is in expulsion hearings. We end up, and it's not the clear cut, you know, we've got to do some expulsion. It's the student that we think the reasons they've come to an expulsion hearing have more to do with them not being successful in the comprehensive high school situation. But if we expel, they go to community school. If they're a disciplinary issue, then we don't expect you guys to, you know, be the final, you know, the elephant graveyard where we send all the kids who have behavioral issues. But I hope I'm speaking for the other board members, the frustration is we know there's a resource there, and we know that if we could connect the kid to the resource that we could expect to see good things happen. A lot of times we do discuss it with the parent or guardians or whoever they're representing the child, and we bring it up. It's amazing to me the attitudes you get. I mean, we just kind of, oh, my gosh, no, little Johnny at Pacific Beach. Well, have you ever actually been to Pacific Beach? And it's a struggle. And I don't know what I want to do with that. I just wanted to put it out there because some of the times we want to turn to you all to have you help these kids and help us essentially deal with really tough decisions at times. And, again, I'll say again, I still think there is potential at Pacific Beach that is not being tapped into. Part of it's a resource allocation issue, but part of it is getting kids to the school site and in a period of their academic life where they're still in a better position to be helped, in a better position to be engaged and taken through to graduation. And that's what I'd sort of like to hear your thoughts on, is who do you want and how can we get them to you?
You know, if I could respond to that, one of the things that I know historically has happened, and I know Ken did it, and I'm doing it this year, is that we have a pretty good working relationship with community school, Templeton Independent Study, the counselors at San Luis and Morro Bay High Schools. I think as word gets out there and as we're willing to take students from Templeton Independent Study, we get calls from the, you know, we have a working relationship because not only do we take students from Templeton, but we assign students there. I mean, we talk to parents that sometimes that is a better placement than Pacific Beach for an individual child. Or a parent will come and talk to us about what are the options for their child who's at Pacific Beach. So we kind of have a two-way street going on. And I think as it becomes seen as a more viable option for students, I think we're going to grow. I think we're seeing it now. I met with two parents today who are of students recommended from San Luis Obispo High School who are going to be coming starting Thursday. So, you know, I think it's coming, but I think you're right. I think it's a natural offshoot of a successful program. I think word's going to get out. I think it'll be a viable option for kids. And I think with growth, as we grow beyond our 60 kids, then I think it's going to require some kind of response. And I think it's going to happen. I just think it's a matter of time. I talk to Rick every once in a while, and I say, Rick, you know, we're at a bubble, and I don't know whether the bubble's going to pop because we're up to 60 kids. Are we going to lose five, or are we going to keep the five, and so we're going to grow by to 65? What happens is that sometimes a bubble bursts, and we lose five kids, you know. So it's kind of like Chairman Mao said, you know, progress is two steps forward, one step back, you know, but we're making progress. And so I don't know that we're there yet. So
I just wanted to pick up on, I want to affirm the basic thing that Walter's saying, if I'm hearing you right, and that is that when kids are in an appropriate setting, an educational setting, usually you don't have behaviors that are destructive. And that's what, you know, special ed's based on too, is appropriate. And when we get, this is my situation. I'm an English teacher, but I have algebra in the afternoon. When I have 15 kids, special day class algebra, you're going to have some behaviors because it's too difficult and it's too many students. But so when you have a school like this where it's appropriate for the students, and that's why they're great. You know, and there's some kids that you see in expulsion hearings who, you know, if they were in an appropriate setting and had the right classes, they wouldn't be manifesting these destructive behaviors. And there are other kids who are a different story, but so you just wish you could get them in the right setting. That would be the most helpful thing. So it's nice to have this option for some of these students.
Dr. Valentine.
Yeah, and I'd like to continue the theme that Mrs. Dickinson raised, and that is the notion of options. I think a value that the board has embraced in a number of different tasks that you have taken on has been the value of alternatives and choices. How can we provide a number of options, a number of alternatives for our students to handle high school in the best way that each individual child, each individual student can find? And the more options we can find, then the more kids that we can touch and the more kids that we can reach. And so we look at Pacific Beach High School and we find so many success stories, and every one of those success stories represents a student who wasn't a success story in another place. And we provided an option, thanks to the dedication and the love that these folks bring into Pacific Beach High School. By the same token, we look at other alternatives that we have for kids. We mentioned the independent study program, which is offered in another school district. It is a cooperative venture, if you will, in the sense that we provide facilities within San Luis Coastal at virtually no charge in order to operate an independent study program for students from San Luis Coastal in partnership with another school district. I think that's another creative option for kids who are looking for a different way to take care of high school. When the board looked at graduation requirements, one of the values that came through loud and clear was we wanted to provide a system of requirements that supported students who were going on to four-year universities, as well as supporting options for kids who may have other plans in terms of their post-secondary education. And if you look at the graduation requirements that this board adopted, you'll find that kids do have those options. And in fact, it resulted in the different graduation requirements the Pacific Beach High School has that are different from Morro Bay High School, that are different from San Luis Obispo High School. We have schedules at both of our high schools that are different. We have open enrollment so that students can transport themselves from one place to another. And I would like to affirm the option that we're hearing tonight at Pacific Beach High School, and certainly we would welcome more students if they need that to go to Pacific Beach High School, and then we could talk about the resources we allocate based upon the number of students who are there, but also want to reaffirm the board's commitment to providing kids with alternatives that actually work and spell success for them. I think we are a long ways down the road for serving kids that come with very, very different needs with programs that can meet those needs.
Okay, I think it's time probably to bring this to a close. You're all here after a long work day. We appreciate you coming. Speak with us and share with us. I think we all get very excited when we think about PB and how successful it is. It's a real feel-good thing. So thank you for your hard work and thank you for your presentation. Okay, we are adjourned.